You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden. And on today's show, we'll take a look at the exciting new generation version of Korean natural farming known as Jadam with Ray Maki of Permaculture Kauai. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostila. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700 square foot warehouse at Pui Industrial Park, Lahui. Family owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
Yes, thank you so much, underwriters, and we're back again for another show here on Wednesday, coming out of the rain here on the North Shore to spend some time with you. I'm really excited to have Ray Maki in with me. We're going to be talking about the new form of Korean natural farming that's taking hold and promises even lower cost effective solutions for on-farm generation of fertility, pest and disease management, and so many other crucial aspects of the agriculture experience. And so we're going to get to that soon, but we're going to turn to our celestial session, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our daily and weekly gardening and farming activities. When should we be harvesting? When should we be planting? Well, we're going to get to that right now. And today's Hawaiian moon brought to us by the 2016 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar. Thanks to the Hanalei Watershed Hui and the Hui of organizations that have worked to make that possible. Today's Hawaiian moon is Ole Pau, and Ole Pau will rise over Kauai at 3:36 p.m. this afternoon. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, sometime later. I didn't mark that down, actually, for today, but I will say that the moon sets at 3:21 a.m. tomorrow morning. 82% of the moon's beautiful face will be illuminated. We have the full moon coming up next Monday, June 20th. And Ole Pau is the fourth of four Ole moons in the first week of the Hawaiian moon month. Loving you too, Andrew. There's so much love here at the station. Love it so much. Yes, so back to our reading. Fantastic. Ole Pau is not recommended for planting. For Ole means nothing without non-productive. However, this is a time traditionally recommended for weeding. And certainly with all our rain, the weeds are coming out easy here on the North Shore of Kauai. Now for our biodynamic look at things brought to us by Heaven on Earth Starts. We are in the descending moon phase, and that signals planting time as the energies travel down into the lower portion of our plants. So Wednesday, the moon is in Virgo, an earth sign, making it a good time to plant some roots. How about some carrots and beets? Sounds good. Thursday, the moon enters Libra, an air sign, which is a good time to work with our flowering plants, and it's an especially good time to plant beautiful and long-lasting blooms, especially noted for tomorrow, Thursday, based on the celestial influences. Friday through Sunday, the moon enters Scorpio, a watery constellation. That's a good time to work with our leafy plants. And Robin recommends some perpetual spinach. And let's see, Molokhia, Malabar, drought-tolerant greens, for those of you not on the North Shore. But entering the sunny time of the year, it sure is important on the south side of the island. And then Monday and Tuesday of next week, the moon will be in Sagittarius, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruiting plants. And the sun enters Gemini and full moon at this time. Happy solstice, Robin proclaims, and the moon is also going ascending at that time. So that's Monday and Tuesday of next week, Tuesday being the solstice. So thanks so much to Heaven on Earth for that. And without further ado, I would like to introduce my special guest in studio, a good friend and certainly a teacher of mine and collaborator. It's Ray Maki of Permaculture Kauai. He's been plying the farming trade on Kauai for over 20 years now. And he's an instructor and a leader of the Hawaii Farmers Union United Kauai chapter and so many more things. And it's just great to have you, Ray. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, it's great to be here, Paul.
How's it been?
Oh, it's so good.
What's going off at your farm?
Avocados. Just I can't seem to get into a lull in production. Charwell is the most amazing avocado. Mm.
Can you describe it for our listeners?
The avocado itself?
The Charwell in specific.
Well, Charwell is a very adapted Hawaiian variety of avocado. It's not a watery avocado. It's an oily avocado. And it just is always in fruit on my farm. You know, even in the lull times, there's always some fruit on that tree.
Wow.
And I've even gotten into cutting half of the tree, which sets back the flowering cycle so that even on one tree, you know, it'll catch up with flowers and then there'll be full fruit on it, you know, on the other half, and then they'll kind of flip over. And so I'm very impressed with that particular variety.
That's such a great example of both working with the inherent qualities of a particular variety of plant, but then learning how you can interact with that process. And I know that's a cornerstone of the Korean natural farming techniques that you've been teaching our community for several years now. And, that's really the sort of the kernel of this whole thing of gardening and farming. It's coming in and encouraging the plant to even realize behaviors that it can't do without us.
It's true. And, you know, even in an environment like Mo'a, which sort of, you know, is drier and we get some good winds out there, you know, I'm not watering this plant. I'm not really fertilizing it. It's, you know, all I have to really do is bring compost, which, you know, I work with an inoculated compost, and it seems to be proving itself, you know, handling itself on its own.
Wow.
So I'm kind of studying the boundaries of that too, because I want to have production in my system. I don't want to just challenge a plant to its, you know, or challenge nature to give me something that I haven't offered, you know, something back to. So, but it seems to be working well in that environment, and lets me do all the other stuff I have to do.
How old is this Charwell avocado tree, would you say?
Oh, I guess maybe 12, 13 years now.
Okay. And would you recommend it for people, regardless of their location, or does it do really better within an envelope?
It's a pretty well-adapted Hawaiian variety.
Great.
So, yeah, I would recommend it in almost every environment.
Fantastic. The Charwell. Maybe we'll sample one sometime soon. I would love to try it.
Should have brought you a basket of them.
Okay. Well, there's always time later on. But one of the things that I'm grateful for is that at least once a month I get an opportunity to see you And I know that that's going to happen because each and every month on the second Wednesday, you are there as our island representative of the Hawaii Farmers Union United. There is a monthly meeting. We do announce it on the show each month. And I want to thank you so much for taking that lead along with all of the other service projects that you do here on Kauai. But that's a really huge one and gives us a place, sort of a home base to keep checking in and building community around small family farming and just to really disseminate information too as well and bringing amazing speakers and opportunities for the producer.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. We have so Hawaii Farmers Union has been incorporated since 2010. We have about 900 members across the state now. Been growing, 20% a year during that whole time. And our mission is to support and represent the family farmer in Hawaii, no matter what style of farming they practice. But recognizing that we have a lot of issues that affect the family farm, and we're watching the demographic of the average age of the farmer increasing every year. So that average age this year is 61. And so we're focused on land, water, housing, marketing, distribution, new crop development, farmer training, just whatever is in the wheelhouse of the professional or family farmer, and particularly focused on regenerative agricultural techniques, organic. But, we have a good number of commercial fertilizer farmers in our group, and they get a lot of benefit out of how we represent them in Honolulu and across the state. So there's 9 chapters across the state, Kauai being one of them, and a lot of people, we're getting grants now to really work with different programs that we're focused on. Korean Natural Farming, as Paul mentioned, is one of them. And so the government and the industry is recognizing that, we have a seat at the table, and we're solutions-oriented. We're not anti-anything. We're just there to represent the family farmer, but also not just complain about something, but offer what we believe are solutions to many of the environmental and social and economic problems of the family farmer.
Wow, that's a big charge, but I know we can do it. All the solutions are kind of presenting themselves, yeah? The bright minds coming together, and it's so exciting to synergize all of this effort, really. And I love the fact that it's not an exclusive group. It's not just for the organic farmer. It's for people who do all kind of practices. But no matter what kind of practices we do, we can always be improving those practices. And the best way to do that is to rub elbows with other farmers and learn what's working for them. Because often the most environmentally suitable solution is also the most economically suitable solution, it seems.
Yeah, and it's almost a back to the future scenario. And the key words in what I just said was the family farmer. So that is somebody who and their family who steward a parcel of land and farm as some part of their economic activity on that space, but really holding that space. And that's really been the nature of human society until the very recent past, where agriculture and people's just geographical distribution across the planet necessitated and resulted in the fact that they were holding these spaces for their family and producing food, really, for the local community. And that was a virtuous loop until, the recent past, where governmental policies and scale of operations have exceeded that and watched family farmers go out of business and lose their land and you know, corporate interests come behind them, and the few strong shoulders scenario that Earl Butz, who was the Secretary of Agriculture under Richard Nixon, really advanced these policies. And it was the 70s were just a terrible decade for the American farmer. And so, you know, when we lose a generation of people who are growing and learn from their father and learn from their father and or their mother, and if we lose one generation, we're kind of put into the situation where we are today, where we have to train ourselves, or, you know, go out and get the training that we need to really hone our professional skills to be effective agriculturists. And that's, I think, what we see in the landscape here, is that, you know, some older families have, you know, maintained their farming land and their practices and taught that to their next generation. And then we also see a whole other group of younger people who might be coming from a different environment, just a different family environment, but are interested in agriculture, but don't have the skills developed over a lifetime of watching their family mirror these values or these skills. And so we're at the ABC stage of teaching people how to farm again. And now, and then many people are making choices about how and the style of farming that they want to do. So there's challenges in whatever style of farming you're engaged in, but really understanding nature and its system and how it wants to regenerate itself, and then offer a bounty, you know, that's our end result. But natural systems need, you know, inputs, and then they give outputs. And those are, you know, you can't short circuit either one side of that equation. You know, it has to be sustainable. And so whether you go out and you work somewhere else so you can afford your fertilizer to engage in your farming hobby is something that many people do, or really study the science and the art of what nature's showing us to farm in a way that nature supports itself. So that's really what I'm trying to focus on myself.
This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. This is your host, Paul, and I'm speaking with Ray Mackey from Permaculture Kauai and also the chapter president here on Kauai for the Hawaii Farmers Union United, which brings advocacy for small family farming. I don't know why I'm tripping over that word. Small family farming, best management practices in the field. There's a lot of advocacy at the legislature that comes from the statewide organization, and there are trainings, workshops also. So I want to thank so much not only Ray, but the other people who really helped to hold up Hawaii Farmers Union United here on Kauai, and maybe you might want to mention a couple of those people.
Well, Annie Brook is my go-to girl for everything. She's also the secretary of the state group. I'm the vice president. So the state group has really good representation from Kauai. And, you know, I also want to mention that I'm a board member of Regenerations International Botanical Gardens, which Paul is the president of. So I think we just have an amazing team of people who've been in this game for, like you say, over 20 years, and have networked with each other and have created amazing projects like the Food Forest, which Paul is manager of, and, you know, I was involved with in the beginning. And so we're actually at the stage now where we're able to demonstrate the things that we're talking about. Regenerative farming, creating systems that are sustainable, you know, like up at the Food Forest. We haven't, put a drop of water on the ground up there in years. Of course, it's Kalihiwai Ridge, but, you know, it can get dry up there. And, you know, our Berman Basin system has really proven itself the nitrogen-fixing trees that we planted by design to replenish the system have worked. And so that fertility is evident in the, just the amazing growth of these trees with, like, just the most minimal sort of inputs given to them. You know, there's Rollinia trees out there that I think that are 8 inches around, you know, after 3 years. And so it's such a pleasant environment to be in. And I really have to take my hat off to Paul for, you know, holding up the flag on that project and many others, of course. But, you know, Paul has really poured sweat and tears and a lot of blood onto that soil, and the results are evident. So
thank you so much, Ray, and you played beyond a crucial part in the formation of the food forest through leading the design, and then in the couple of months leading up to, or at least month and a half leading up to, the installation, on-site management, heavy equipment work, leading crews with people running big machines, and helping to advocate as well, and really say, okay, yes, we're going to build a Berman Basin system, not because we have to, but we want to demonstrate it. We want people to be able to. And yes, it's going to take more work. It's going to take specialized equipment. Installing the irrigation. I mean, there's so much that you did on the front end that will always be remembered and appreciated so deeply for the success that it is at the food forest.
Well, thank you, Paul. I mean, it's a jewel for all of us. And the intent for the project, that was our December 2012 project. So we're very inspired by that time interval and just the way people showed up and the way they continue to show up for the project.
Indeed. Thank you. And we've got another irrigation line to install coming up pretty soon here at the Seed Center across the Ironwood Hedge. I finished up that the trench. I think I dug it a little deep, but too deep's better than too shallow, right? I'm hoping at any rate.
Sometimes it is.
Might need to backfill a little bit, but we're going to be putting in the mainline irrigation coming up very soon, as soon as we can get some equipment back in there. But it has been extremely wet, and we've got Lynn and Ilana from the Hawaii Public Seed Initiative coming out tomorrow to Kauai to visit the project. We'll be growing another round of seeds there coming up soon, and excited to continue putting energy in that direction of the development of the field. And I'm going to be out there tomorrow morning. If anybody wants to join in, you could give me a call, 652-4118. But enough of things that we often talk about on the show, because the food forest, I must admit, does come up on a pretty regular basis. No apologies there. But this is a great opportunity for us to blend in as well on some of the educational work that you've done. You really have brought Korean natural farming on a consistent basis to Kauai. My understanding of the technique or the process is that it really found a foothold on the Big Island first, in terms of Master Cho coming in and sharing the trainings. And I know you continue to pilgrimage out to the Big Island to continue your advanced training in that regard. But you've really done more than anyone I can think of in terms of bridging it to Kauai and bridging it in terms of awareness campaigns, but also workshops and making practitioners out of anyone who's interested in the practice.
Yeah, that's easy for me. I'm so inspired by Master Cho's program. And now, you know, we'll talk in a few minutes about his son, young son Cho's program. And so, gosh, I've even said it before on the radio. You know, at a certain point, I was, as an organic farmer, I was just really getting frustrated and a little burned out on the cost of inputs. And I think that, you know, coming from some people, or most of us, come from this idea that you got to throw it down on the ground and you got to go to the fertilizer store to get it. So the cost of these inputs, you know, a bag of oyster shell flour or, you know, some other essential cation mineral fertilizer is nothing more than a pulverized rock on the mainland. But the cost of shipping and then the, whatever premium the retailers put on it is just really, you have to be a very effective farmer to get every dollar back for your investment that you pour into the soil here. And if you don't manage those costs, either your produce is more expensive or you're going to go out of business or you're going to struggle for years and years and years. And so what really excited me about Master Cho's system, and he has the common general term for that system is Korean natural farming, is the low cost and the ability for the farmer to create most of the inputs that they need for their own farm. And the only, it does rely on inputs that are currently imported, but they are alcohol, sugar, and molasses, and vinegar, which all could be produced here on the island, if you know, and are produced in most indigenous communities right there in the village. So if we can, you know, come into that awareness ourselves, and there could be a potential for people to be producing those inputs. So Cho's system is an aerobically based system. His theory is that anything that he can induce an aerobic fermentation on will be in a more ready form, biologically available for plants and animal uptake. This system is like completely proven in animal systems. Piggeries, chickens, cattle all benefit directly. And Mike DuPont, a former employee of CTAR over on the Big Island, has really taken this up and has proven how, for example, piggeries, for example, 10% to 20% of time and energy, and then the resultant slurry that comes from having to clean the pig's pens every single day is just an enormous amount of time, effort, and expense. So they use a deep litter system. They don't have to change the bedding. They will inoculate fecal material that sits on the surface of deep litter beds, which is basically just a deep bed of compost. Pigs will run on that for about 4 years, 3 years, and then you'll go in, you'll have all that compost, you'll replenish it with extra green waste that you have on your farm or, you know, the adjacent farm, and absorb that efficiency into your economic model. Just one example. And so in animal systems, it's completely proven to work and has adapted itself from the temperate climate of Korea, which it was where it originated, to the subtropics where we're at. We're getting ready to set up programs to bring this program to the mainland and teach it in the Midwest and in other animal producing areas. And we're also receiving funds through the Department of Ag here in Hawaii to field test these ingredients at scale and cooperate with CTAR to really take this beyond anecdotal "we love it" to scientific "it works" status. And the state is very interested in it because one of the mandates that they have is decreasing mainland inputs. And for every bag of 50-pound bag of fertilizer that we don't have to bring over, they're excited to subsidize the study that will hopefully prove our point. So that we're talking about Master Cho. So his system is aerobically based, and just in the last year, we've become aware of Young San Cho's system. He's the son of Master Cho, and independently developed a system that is focused on anaerobic decomposition and inoculation. So it's interesting to see the father, he's like completely aerobic, and then the son is like completely focused on anaerobic. And I think, you know, we're going to do what we've already done with Master Cho's system, is just hybridize it, because these, you know, this is going to work differently in Korea than it does in Hawaii. And we're already, you know, we've already modified it and hybridized it to make it work for us here. So I'm next weekend, actually, if anybody's interested, Jadam is the name of Youngsan Cho's system, J-A-D-A-M, and you can check him out online at en.jadam.kr, and that's their website. He has an incredible book. This book is, I'm just so delighted with it. It's deep in explanations. It's pictures on almost every page, you know, detailing the processes. And it's just after, you know, working with Master Cho's literature, which just recently got translated from Korean into English, this new book detailing the anaerobic processes is an amazing document. So,
fantastic. Let me take a moment, sure, right, to just say this is KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, Kauai Community Radio. The show is In the Garden on the Farm. We're here until 1 o'clock, and then we'll be joined by Tracy for Kauai Vibrations. And we are speaking with Ray Mackey of Permaculture Kauai and Hawaii Farmers Union and Regenerations and many organizations. But right now, specifically, we're talking about Jadam, the new take on Korean natural farming by Master Cho's son,
Youngsan Cho.
Youngsan Cho, and focusing in on the anaerobic. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions before we get too far, because you were talking about the ability for us to create the inputs needed for the version one, if you will, of Korean natural farming that focuses on aerobic. And you said sugar, and you said vinegar. And I was wondering, as far as the sugar goes, just recently pressed my own sugar cane, along with help from One Song Farm and such. And Krista and Chuck and everybody helped out, but it seemed like such an easy way to get sugar. Is that an easy way to actually, I mean, I was stunned at what a small amount of sugar cane could create a gallon of juice. Is that something that can be quickly utilized in the Korean natural farming, preparations, or is there a problem with just using the straight juice?
There's a lot of different, preparations, so, I think that it can easily be used anywhere that we're using molasses currently. You know, it's basically just a sugar that the microorganisms can feed on and, you know, promote metabolic, increase metabolism in the inoculation medium. So I think that it would be effective in that way. You know, the other way that we use sugar is actually to, you know, crush up plant materials that we want to extract the liquid portion of. And so that dry crystal is very effective for osmotically removing that. So that's a little difficult.
Right,
you know,
with the juice.
Right.
And then another key aspect is the medium with which the indigenous microorganisms are proliferated. And from learning from you that traditionally, the wheat mill run has been used, and knowing that it's harder to get in Hawaii, and we've all been talking about alternative solutions for that matrix to be inoculated, what's your current thought on the best kind of carbohydrate-based input that would be for that purpose of growing the IMOs?
I think this is really what the study is going to focus on, from my perspective, is replacing that medium. So there's two different types of microbially dominated compost. One is fungally dominated, and that'll go on to perennial plants and woody trees and orcharding, or, you know, like say perennial landscapes. And then the other one is bacterially dominated. And of course, you know, every plant has a bacterial and a fungal association, but, you know, they will have a domination of one of the bacterial or fungal. Excuse me. And, so I think for wood chips is an obvious fungal inoculation medium that we have here in ready quantities that we could make ourselves or purchase. Even here, it's expensive to buy wood chips, and you'll never have enough. So, but we have achieved that. We can easily create fungally dominated microorganism compost. And the innovation that we're really shooting for is, what do we have that can be used as a bacterial medium for annual planting systems like farming and gardening? And so when you look around, one thing that we have a lot of is guinea grass. And, you know, guinea grass gets a bad rap, really. I mean, I know it can be very inconveniently placed, places itself, but that's the world's highest protein grass that grows so fast and is amazing for feeding animals with. But I also think that it could be a medium for bacterial inoculated compost. Bagasse, we're working with HCNS over on Maui. This is their last year of production. They are going to leave a lot of cane in the field, and we're excited about that. Like you say, you know, 1 gallon of grass juice, you know, it has almost the same mineral profile as wheatgrass does. So if, and it tastes that great, you know, it's, there's actually a big market for organically pressed sugar cane juice in the world and in the organic marketplace.
And would you include actually the green tops to get that nutritional profile, or it's just straight from the cane itself?
You know, I've never juiced the grass portion, so I'm just more familiar with the cane itself, but I'm sure that there would be, you know, a mineral profile that would add to.
But you're saying that the mineral profile is similar with cane juice to wheatgrass juice.
Right.
Wow.
It's like they're grasses, you know.
Ooh, let's go drink some right now.
Yeah. So, you know, that really, to me, is the holy grail, you know, where we can take a weed, quote unquote, and turn it into a compost for commercially viable systems. Mm-hmm. And we're already doing that. We're growing cover crops. We're cutting down guinea grass. We're incorporating it into the soil. What Cho would say is to immediately spray it with an inoculation so that it just goes right to work and doesn't overly tax the system by depleting it of nitrogen before it cycles through its complete process and then returns nitrogen back, really in the form of the biology that lived and died, and all their decaying bodies are, you know, nitrogenous substances and available in a biological form for the plant to uptake. So that's replacing the medium is really a key. And then, you know, so what Young-San Cho talks about is his system is anaerobic. It's not aerobic. Crop rotation is not necessary in his system, and he uses nature as an example of that. You know, nature doesn't replant itself every year. It's, you look at a landscape, and it's a, it can be even a monocrop system, like, you know, the prairies or, you know, a forest of one type of trees, that are just growing in a monocrop in a balanced way. They've, you know, nature has figured out how to maintain that vitality. And, you know, and it's also logical to see that The food that those plants in that monocrop are eating are the decaying body of themselves, of their predecessors, or, you know, just whatever they're dropping off of themselves in the natural growing process. So Cho and Young-san both agree that the best food for, or the best food or the best medicine for a plant is actually the chemicals that were in that plant, or were in another plant of the same type, and could be applied either to the soil or to the tissue of the plant and absorbed in, and you know, have the profile that that plant needs for its nutrition. He says to leave the crop residues in the field. Compost does not need to be fully fermented. Use undecomposed matter on the surface is fine. Grasses and weeds do not necessarily need to be eliminated. You know, it's another concept that we've been working with for a long time, is keep the green blanket on everything as long as possible. He uses ambient temperature for the best colonization, because those are going to be the bacterias and fungi that continue to live in the open environment that we will put them back into. You know, when you've got a compost pile at 140 degrees and it's, you know, proliferating with thermophilic bacteria, those are not going to be the microorganisms that survive at 90 degrees, you know, when we put it back into the field. So we'll culture our piles in the middle range of temperature, 120 degrees max, 110 to 115 is most desirable. And then, so those are the mesophilic bacterias that have the widest adaptability range for temperatures and environments that we have in here in Hawaii. And so Young-san Cho also uses anaerobic fermentation and uses leaf mold as his primary inoculant material. So leaf mold from very stable environments that organic matter piles up in, and then the bottom layer right on top of the soil between the rough material and the soil layer itself, gathering that. And so like Master Cho's system and every inoculation theory is junk in equals junk out. So really making sure that we're not bringing diseased material to our inoculation site, and also trying to promote the widest range of compatible microorganism life. So we're talking fungi, we're talking bacteria, actinomycetes, it's, you know, all the way up into the small insects in that system, you know, is the best inoculation material.
That leaf mold you're talking about does sound kind of like a temperate condition, where you get that buildup of leaf matter over this, over the years, because it doesn't fully break down because of the wintering period. And so finding what that would be, what is that layer, if it's so crucial to the process, what is that layer in a subtropical environment?
I've been going out and looking for it myself, and you're right, it's not that easy. And so what I've been doing in Cho's system is creating these piles of compost that I'm really focused on bringing kind of the widest range of materials that are dominated by bacteria, and then fungally dominated piles, and, you know, bringing a lot of different materials of those types into and cultivating those piles really as my seed material for my system. It's growing on my land, or it lives on my land. I'll be using it on my land. I've created, you know, the best source for the inoculation. So teaspoons of this material, like, is the mother for tons of it, if you wanted it to be. But, you know, that still takes time. It takes the process. And if those couple teaspoons in the beginning weren't that good, then everything else on the back end will be less efficacious, you know?
And is the lactoacid bacteria as important, it being an anaerobic bacteria itself, and knowing how important it is in Master Cho's Korean natural farming, is his son putting even more emphasis on it as a component of the process or at all?
He's got one ingredient that, or one input that, you know, is an LAB, lactoacid bacteria.
Yeah. But it's not like central to the whole process either.
No, it's not central to the whole process. You know, Cho uses LAB as a sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And because the, you know, the density of the lactobacillus is so intensive, and it can be facultative microorganisms that can go between aerobic and anaerobic environments. So even though it proliferates in an anaerobic fermentation, it will still have some lifetime in an aerobic environment as well. Mm. And then it just, you know, like a great example of how that's used is in the manure yard, you know, the chickens or the pigs and, you know, like fecal matter everywhere. Just spraying this LAB on top of it immediately brings down the scent and, you know, gets the decomposition, the natural decomposition process going. So it's the sanitizer, quote unquote, of this system.
Right. Well, thinking of the Jadam system as an anaerobic solution, if you will, that's the first thing that comes to mind for me is, oh, does that mean the farm is going to smell bad because it's going to have all this anaerobic bacteria? And we kind of learn in our compost making processes that, oh, if it smells bad, it means that there's anaerobic activity and you need to fix the problem. Now we have this system that says you're actually trying to have these kind of conditions. Does it shed new light on the sort of standard view that anaerobic bacteria is harmful to our health, it's harmful to the plant's health, it's harmful to animals, etc.?
It does bring up the topic, because there will be smells in the Jadam system. The Master Cho's system is very pleasant kind of smelling, you know, inputs. Young-san's stuff is definitely got some scent to it. But there is that predisposition that you're talking about, that anaerobic is bad. You know, like, we're living examples of this system. You know, we're respiring aerobically, but all of our food is decomposing anaerobically in our body. So in the same system, aerobic and anaerobic systems are working. And, you know, I mean, we all know the result of anaerobic decomposition in our own body, you know.
Oh, sorry about that. It was breakfast.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't going to say anything. But anyways, you know, so, but that doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, that's how we digest our food. And, you know, there might be some scent involved with it later. Mm-hmm. So
there might be some scent, but there's some sense, too.
Yeah, it makes sense.
That's a great tagline. So we're just dipping into the basics here, but I'm imagining that given the fact that you've held a number of traditional Korean natural farming workshops, that you're devising a workshop coming up for Jadam. I know it's a bit early maybe to announce a date, but I don't know. What are you thinking on
that subject? Yeah, it's a little too early to announce a date. I'm just getting ready to do my family vacation. And so when I get back, probably in September, I really want to have a Jadam workshop here on Kauai. And we're also, Hawaii Farmers Union is also scheduling Master Cho and Young-san Cho for a year in advance as well, so that they'll be able to, you know, both those guys will finally get over here to Kauai, and, you know, you don't have to travel to the other islands to see them. So that's one of our big priorities.
Wow, that's so exciting. Fantastic. Yeah. The emissaries of this tradition, and, What just a special opportunity to be able to meet them in person, which you've done.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Actually, this weekend over on Maui is Young San Cho is having a workshop. So I want to encourage anybody who might want to just jump on the plane. It's $100 for a two-day workshop. Just unbelievably.
Can't mention prices, but...
Oops, sorry. Excuse me. It's very affordable, and you can go to hinaorganics.org, I think it is, or .com. It's either .com or .org. Mm-hmm. Hina, H-I-N-A, organics, to register. And so the word is out. Hundreds and hundreds of people in Hawaii have gone to these trainings, been certified, you know, practitioners, using it in their own systems. You know, there's always the peak of inspiration, the trough of, you know, inspiration levels. And, you know, in some ways it is easier to just drive over to the fertilizer store and buy something. But, you know, a little bit in this system goes a long ways. There's formulas for, you know, batches that will last, you know, entire cropping cycles. And it's the Jadam system is so easy. It's like all you need is water, the leaf material, maybe, or the leaf duff material, sea salt, and maybe another plant material that you want to work with or bring some of the fertilizer qualities to your system for. Put it in, you know, an HDPE2 container that's like plastic, safe for food, and snap the lid on, wait 2 days, it's ready to go. So I know a lot of farmers out there, they're scratching their head going, what? You know, like, that isn't going to work. I get it, because I'm, you know, a skeptic too. But it is working, and everything is, you know, everybody's got to try it themselves or see somebody who's doing it, or it's just getting familiar with it. But it's literally that easy to make Young San Cho's inputs. And, of course, he's got 50 different types of inputs, but basically that's the general scenario in which they're produced. It's super like cool. So easy.
And maybe you could mention the name of this new book, which I can't wait to get my hands a copy on, of the new Jadam system.
It's Jadam, J-A-D-A-M, Organic Farming is the name of the book. And it's Young, like young as in young child. So it's Young Sang, S-A-N-G, Cho, C-H-O. And again, you can get it at en.jadam, J-A-D-A-M.kr. It's affordable as well.
Awesome. And we only have a couple of minutes left before the end of the show, but I'd love to hear about what kind of work permaculture you're doing. You are the owner and operator of Permaculture Kauai, located here on the northeast shore of Kauai. And what's going on over there? What kind of works are you getting up to these days?
Well, I'm just doing my usual, you know, planting and nursery and, you know, working with the family farmer here on Kauai. I think the thing that really inspires me the most, that I feel like I can be the most effective at, is working with this Korean natural farming system. So I'm really dedicated to it, and I want to see the science prove what we've been thinking all is happening all along. And we have to turn the corner on the cost and the availability of locally sourced inputs for our organic farms. You know, this is, you know, organic farming has a reputation that it's not as productive as commercial fertilizer systems. I don't believe that. I think that we can get more productivity in a smaller space by investing in our system early and providing an environment that we don't have to fight nature for an output. And if we just feed the soil, you don't feed the plant, you feed the soil in this system. So if you And then when that's your soil, like there's a pride, there's a deep love that, you know, is inside of all of us when you walk out into your garden and, you know, the ground is rich and you know that you can just plant right into it and, it'll offer you something back, you know. So that's the general theory that I have. And, I'm really excited to work with other people who, want to, you know, decrease their costs of inputs and cultivate a more naturally sustainable production environment on their farms.
Beautiful, Ray. And if people would like to be in touch with you to talk about all of that and explore options for their own projects, how can they be in touch?
You can call me at 634-5412. Or you can email me at permaculturekauai, our island, Kauai, at yahoo.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being in today. And thank you for all of the days in between we get a chance to spend with you here in the studio and all the fine work you're doing and the leadership that you give us. And thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
Loving you, brother.
I love you too, bro.
Just a few more announcements before we turn it over to Tracy and Kauai Vibrations. There's a screen house building project happening at the Kilauea Community Farm. This is the Kilauea Ag Park, but it's a section of the Ag Park there. This is happening this Sunday, June 19th, and it's going to happen from 8 a.m. to noon. And this is at the Kilauea Community Agricultural Center on Lighthouse Road in Kilauea. And they're building a couple of screenhouses for growing tomatoes, cucumber, and zucchini for the community. You can call Jackie at text Jackie at 634-7790 if you need more information. You can also join their email list for regular updates at kilaueacommunityfarm@gmail.com. Jackie's going to be in the studio next week to tell us more about the great, exciting activities that are happening there. They do have regular work days on Wednesdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to noon. And again, to be in touch with Jackie, text her at 634-7790. The Malama Kauai Malama Kauai is hosting Fridays on the Farm, Fridays through the summer, 9 a.m. to noon at the Malama Kauai Community Farm, Waikoa Plantations, Kalihiwai. And this Friday is going to be working on amending soil and planting at the Keiki Garden. And for more information, you can visit malamakauai.org. And there's also an opportunity to chime in on housing with the Kauai General Plan update, and certainly housing a huge issue for the agricultural sector. And thanks so much to the County Planning Department for giving an opportunity for all the best ideas to come together so that the new updated guiding plan can allow for the housing we need as one component of the many problems or challenges that they're tackling for us. This is happening at from 2:30 to 5 p.m. on Tuesday, June 21st, at the Planning Commission Rooms in the Moikeha Building. And you can, for more information, you can go to plankauai.com. And we are, of course, at the Kauai Food Forest each and every Saturday from 8:30 to noon and 2:30 to 5. So check us out there. This has been In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. And this is your host, Paul. I want to thank so much our special guest in studio, Ray Mackey of Permaculture Kauai. And you can be in touch with him, permaculturekauai.com and 634-5412. I got that one right off the top of my head. Please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha, Kauai.